Good morning, America. Good afternoon, good day. Happy Thanksgiving. This is Eugene B. Colson from the BBS Internet Radio Network, and my radio show is Mind Controlled America. If you watch TV, you go to church, you are mind controlled, unlike some of us who are laboratory victims. My guest today is Al. How you doing today, Al?
Just fine. Thank you, Eugene.
We're going to talk about spirituality in this day of Thanksgiving, because many people reflect on God, spirituality, and basically the unknown, because I haven't met anybody who died and came back. Have you yet, Al?
Maybe, but I wasn't aware of it.
Okay, tell us a little bit about yourself and your spirituality that you'd like to talk about today, Al.
Okay, well, maybe we could start with my religious background. I was born into a Jewish family, and both my father and mother were Jewish. We were considered Reformed Jews, and we just observed the holidays. My parents spoke Yiddish, and they tried to teach me, but it was a lost cause. They wanted me to get bar mitzvah, and that didn't happen either. But my two other brothers, I was in the middle, they both got bar mitzvah, you know, a rite of passage for a Jewish boy, 13.
Wait a minute. Isn't bar mitzvah like, you know, meeting the IRS, you get screwed over?
Well, in the Jewish tradition, it's, like I said, a rite of passage for a boy to become a man, you know, and then he recites certain passages from the Torah, and it's a festival, actually, you know, it's a celebration. But I even as a young kid, I couldn't relate. I didn't want to learn Hebrew, and I didn't want to go through the whole ritual. It was a very big disappointment for my father, and it created some conflicts. But there was a history of Judaism, you know, on both sides. Matter of fact, my mom told me that some of my relatives died in the Holocaust. So I grew up not really too religious, but, you know, I got a smattering of it. And then when I left home, I searched in my soul, so to speak, and did a lot of reading and just trying to find some answers as far as, you know, what's life all about and how do we go about living it in the best way possible. So I really delved into a bunch of different theologies and philosophies. And
Before we go any further on that, I want to point out to our listeners that most of the churches across the United States are frauds. You've got a CIA operative or Jesuit operative preacher. If you want to find out if he is, take his sermon tapes and run them through reverse speech. Most of those theologies that are out there through my research and investigation are to get us to miss the mark. The bad guys are primarily devil worshippers, and they do not want us to get a proper relationship with God or with the higher power or whatever it is. So they will twist the Bible, they will twist the teachings, and try to make everybody think like they want them to think. And so this question of spirituality is a big, big issue, because they want us to screw up so that we miss the mark as well. Go ahead, Al.
As far as that's concerned, I think there is a difference, a significant difference between being religious or following a religious doctrine versus being spiritual. For me, religion is not important. I define it as an organized set of beliefs or, you know, way of perceiving the world, way of perceiving God, acting, morality.
Then would you describe the higher power as truth or what?
Yes, definitely. It's a seeking of truth. But everybody has a different slant on truth.
Well, there's only things that are true and things that are not and things we don't know.
Yeah. But and there's a lot of argument about what's true, you know. I mean, everybody has a different opinion about that. But I do believe there's an objective truth, which is associated with God, and that's what I've been seeking in my life.
Well, is that, would you describe that as Joel Osteen feel-goodism?
I'm not familiar with that.
Oh, you don't know who Joel Osteen is?
No.
He's got a huge indoor arena where it seats about 20,000 people, gets up there, nice air conditioning, and tells everybody how good they are, how to feel good all the time. And he never tells about, you know, walking a proper path or doing the right thing, helping those in need. All he wants to talk about is how to make yourself feel good about yourself.
Huh.
And the vast majority of the religions around the world in the United States, they want you to think that, oh, well, you went to church, you went to confession, you went to temple. Now it's okay to screw everyone.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of hypocrisy involved in religion. That's why I've shied away from it. You know, I did attend synagogue rituals, customs, you know, and for a while, but then I just broke away from it and did my own searching, as I said earlier. And I tend to agree with you. It's just really a religion is a indoctrination process. It makes people feel good for, you know, a couple hours, go to church on Sunday, and then you go back to your sinful ways. You know, and that's not true of everybody. I'm not trying to stereotype.
Well, I got ripped off by this wonderful Israeli Jew, and I don't dislike Jews. I just like crooked Jews, and shall we call them kikes. he ripped me off big time, but their belief, one of their beliefs is they get, all their sins are forgiven every year as long as they call you up on Jewish New Year and say, Happy Jewish New Year. Now everything he did to me was okay.
Well, that's a farce. That's like the Christians believing that they can sin their entire life, and then on their deathbed, they, you know, they say, I love Jesus, and Jesus, please forgive me, and it's, you know, it's all, the whole slate is wiped clean. That's baloney.
I would agree with you that, with rare exception, the only person I've ever heard of that had ever mentioned in the Bible was a thief hanging on the cross next to Jesus, where he was given the kingdom of heaven for having a humble heart.
Right.
Even though he was a thief.
Right. Well, there's...
But most of these people you're talking about is they want to rape, pillage, and burn, and then right before they die, they say, I'm sorry, God.
Yeah. Well, true confession is repentance. It's not just a verbal thing. It's an action. And there's so much hypocrisy in the world. For someone to claim that they're religious and be a hypocrite, you know, is a sin as far as I'm concerned. So that's where I draw the line between religion and spirituality. For me, spirituality is a way of life. It's how I think, how I act, how I treat people, my relationship to God, my relationship to the world. And I'd say,
oh, does that mean if you actually offend someone, you're going to go to them and ask forgiveness?
Well, I try not to offend people, you know, but I can apologize. I've apologized on occasion. I'm not perfect.
Well, a couple months ago, I offended you without intending to do. It probably came from something out of my mind control. But what did I do? I called you up and said, I'm sorry.
Right. Well, that's the humble thing to do, to realize that we're not perfect. On occasion, you know, we do offend people, and it's nice to make amends. That's just compassion and caring. And I think that's what Jesus was all about. You know, I'm not a Christian. I've studied Christianity, but not in a fundamental way, more what you would call esoteric way, I guess. And I know I've read a whole bunch of things about Jesus' life, and there's a lot of variations on that theme. But basically, he was trying to teach people, treat others the way you want to be treated. It's pretty simple, you know.
Yeah, and that was the big lesson for the Pharisees. He was constantly pointing out what hypocrites and liars that they were.
Uh-huh.
And I don't believe God and his son are religious at all. They're just truth. They are who they are. Religion is a creation of Satan and man to manipulate the masses. It's like, what was that guy who wrote the communism stuff? He said,
Karl Marx.
Pablum for the masses. And
right.
That's pretty much what it is.
Yeah, yeah. Religion is the opium of the masses. That was Karl Marx. Uh-huh. And there's a lot of truth to that. Religious institutions have been vehicles for manipulating people, vehicles of control and creating guilt and, you know, that kind of thing.
And every nonprofit agency in the United States signs a 501c3 form for the IRS, and it's basically telling them they are agents for the IRS and they owe their allegiance to the IRS before anything else.
Yeah. Well, the IRS, is not a legitimate organization or institution. You know, it's a private institution. It's not federal, and it's
well. I studied that for years. I would agree with you, but you know, they got the guns and the people to come break your doors down. So, whether they're legitimate or not, they are a force to be reckoned with. And if you try to take them on, with very, very few exceptions,
yeah,
you will lose. But these churches, if you remember during the election, if you watched the news at all, they were saying, well, how can these churches preach who to vote for from the pulpit? That's a violation of their church and state. That's a violation of their contract, 501c3. That's not spiritualism, that's control. And this show is about mind control.
Yeah.
And that's why I want nothing to do with churches that are run by the government.
Yeah. Well, if you want to get out from underneath mind control, it's a difficult process. It's like peeling an onion, you know. There's so many layers of socialization or of mind control indoctrination from all facets of life, not just the religious institutions, schools.
Well, many of these religions, there's approximately 3.6 million Americans in the United States that are victims of laboratory mind control, originally MK Ultra, which was designed by Joseph Mengele, and we know he was a really good guy, and then later turned into Operation Monarch. And they use us as sex slaves, kitty sex slaves, assassinations, murder, whatever, and they maintain us through these wonderful 501c churches. And in my case, and I'll give their leaders an opportunity to come on this show to refute this, it was Worldwide Church of God. I remember them being my handlers, keepers, programmers. And I'm not saying every minister that was in Worldwide Church of God, but a vast portion of them are CIA, Illuminati, Jesuit, and Satanic operatives. And their whole thing was you could only get to God through them, like a lawyer. You want to add to that, Al?
Well, I am very suspicious of authority. It goes back to my childhood, what I mentioned earlier, my rebellious nature and shunning tradition, you know, and authority and that kind of thing. So I had an early start on challenging traditional authority and trying to find my own way. And it's a difficult process because it's sometimes a lonely one. You know, you walk in the path by yourself, but I find it an empowering process as well, because I think you use more discernment. If you don't just go along with whatever, you know, authority tells you, whatever authority position we're talking about, whether it be a priest or a rabbi or somebody like that, if you don't question things, then you tend to just go with the flow, and that's not necessarily the most righteous thing to do oftentimes.
Well, and the religions that want you to go with the flow all the time, and they're preaching all this Zen Buddhism and that. I had a very good friend who went through the Tibetan Buddhism theology for 17 years, and we raised through the ranks till we got high enough in the order that they finally revealed to him that they worship Satan or Lucifer. And the statement, shit happens, that's a Zen Buddhism statement. And these Tibetan monks go around setting up these altars and things, which are supposed to be home for 1,500 demons. So people that think that they're going that way to get closer with a higher power, well, they're getting closer with one, all right. It's called Satan.
Well, that's not what my understanding is. I mean, you have the experience, so I'm not saying it's not true, but what I've read...
I'm not talking about everybody that this is what they're doing. I'm talking about Tibetan Buddhism.
Yeah.
The Dalai Lama.
That's surprising. I read about Zen Buddhism. What I got from it is respect for all life and live and let live was the main philosophy. I didn't hear or read anything about Satan being, you know, the god of
well, that's because you didn't write, you know, and I'm not saying there's not a lot of good principles you can pull out of it. There's a lot of good principles you can pull out of a bunch of different religions that are true and correct. But this world, the vast majority of the world leaders are devil worshipers.
I would agree. Yeah, I would agree with that.
And interestingly enough, I know someone who knows everybody that's going to be part of this new incoming administration, and they're all repenting, according to what I've been told.
Yeah, we'll see.
I hope so.
Well, as far as the world religious leaders, I think they're mainly into power and control and not, you know, spirituality and God consciousness, Christ consciousness, however you want to call it, though. There may be a few exceptions. But, again, it's just they're upholding the theology of religious institutions, which is domination over other people, you know. I don't think you necessarily have to go to church or any religious organization to be a spiritual.
Wait a minute. Are you saying that you don't go to church and you don't put your money in the plate, which only pays for the preacher and the building?
No, I don't go to church.
How could you possibly expect to get into an afterlife if you don't support these guys?
Well, see, I don't buy into that. My theology basically is, as I mentioned earlier, you know, I try to live a decent life, try to treat people with respect and courtesy and compassion and do the right thing as far as morality and virtues and try to not sin. But, you know, I'm not perfect. I don't know anybody that is. But I don't.
Well, a couple of years ago, I was at a Gambino Mafia-owned bar, a sports bar. And the bartender gal was saying she needs to go to church, get closer to God. I said, hell, if you want to get closer to God, stay home and read your Bible and stay away from them damn churches. And a guy standing next to me, who was drinking quite a bit more beer than I was, said, you can't say that, you'll go to hell. And I said, so I started asking him questions. I said, doesn't it say in the Bible where two or three are gathered in my name, I am there also? And so he went and got his big and more powerful and more beer-drinking guy than I to come over here and prove that I'm going to go to hell for saying that. And they finally gave up, and the first one, I told him his church is a fraud, his pastor is a womanizer, he's using all the money up, and sure enough, a year later, I ran into him, and that's exactly what he told me.
Yeah. Well, I've had some experience with people who have very rigid belief systems, and they're very judgmental. Of course, if you follow what Christ said in the Bible, it says, you know, judge not that ye shall not be judged. Let he who casts the first stone be free of sin. So that's a principle that I think a lot of people have a difficult time appropriating or living by, and I think we should incorporate that in our daily life as much as possible. But then again, I mean, I'm not the type of person who doesn't judge. I do judge people. I realize that. I was kind of mulling that one over, and it seems like it's a good principle to live by. But at the same time,
I believe the real meaning of that word is condemn, because we can't condemn anyone. And he also talks about don't be a false accuser in court, you know, but if anybody's ever been to divorce court, well, we know that everything is false accusations for the most part.
Only God has the power or right, I think, to condemn others. And, you know, then we...
I would agree.
Then we go off into how our society condemns certain types of behavior and then... rewards others, and it's all topsy-turvy. I mean, we've got people in positions of power in politics and the corporate world that are really devil worshippers and, you know, practicing sinful ways, and yet they go scot-free, and they're rewarded oftentimes financially, whereas there's others who commit minor crimes, and they spend quite a bit of time in jail. So
Well, you take this Ted Stevens up in Alaska. He was convicted of 7 felonies on the least thing they have on him. That man is in, he's got billions in his pocket from corruption. But they convicted him on $250,000 donations. And that's the way it works. They'll find a minor thing to convict somebody of if they're on the outs and leave all the rest of the corruption go. And everybody will stand around and say, oh, how could a man like that ever be in a senator, because they're hypocrites.
Yeah.
Everybody's doing it.
There's a great deal of hypocrisy going around. There's no shortage of that.
And before we go any further, the meaning of the word church, that comes from a Germanic term, and everybody thinks of that in the Bible. It's the building. It's the preacher that works at the building. When the word came from the Greek word ecclesia, which just means the people, it was a small e word. It means the group of people. But the ecclesia also could be people going to a football game. That's ecclesia as well. And the thing that it really means is the group of people that are seeking after God, not this building, not this corporate entity.
Yeah. Well, maybe I can comment a bit about my perception of God, if that's okay with you.
Oh, that's fine with me.
I mean, I don't pretend to have the answers. All I can say is what I've concluded based on my experience and a great deal of research using, you know, a lot of different sources. I think that's one thing. Someone who really is a seeker will not get stuck with one particular ideology or dogma. They'll do the research. But as far as God is concerned, if people have questions whether or not God exists, of course, that's an individual thing, but there's no doubt in my mind, that God exists. And
there's none in mine either, because every time I went into combat, and all but one cases, it was under a mind control situation, I should have been killed, and I was miraculously saved.
Right.
So I know God is there. I was raised in a satanic coven, which is part of mind control. I know there is a Satan as well.
Right, I agree with that. Of course, the Bible talks about how one time Satan was Lucifer, and he was one of the most loved and cherished angels in the hierarchy, and then he rebelled, and because out of envy or pride, tried to usurp God's power, and ever since there's been a celestial battle going on between Satan and God. I do believe that's true.
And that was probably millions of years ago, millions and millions of years ago, because I have a theory that it was during the dinosaur age. All your anthropologists agree that the meat-eating dinosaurs were at the very edge of the dinosaur age and weren't around for very long. I believe he had the power to pervert the creation, and that's where the predators came from.
Yeah, he perverted the creation, and he's still at it. And I think it's an ongoing battle. And how individuals are affected by that is in terms of their everyday decisions, their values, their perceptions, whether or not they act the way Jesus came to teach us, you know, or they act in terms of self-interest, power, greed, licentiousness, whatever it may be. I mean, there's a whole list of sins that I think are influenced by Satan. I don't say that Satan controls us, but there's that influence there. It's ineffable. It's tangible at the same time in terms of the choices we make as far as morality is concerned.
And the perception of Jesus, most people think he was this long-haired sissy running around when he could get lost in a crowd. And at the time, men had short hair and trimmed their beards. He was a tough guy. He wasn't some long-haired sissy, because you look at many of the TV shows or the way they show him in movies, and they make him act like a homosexual half the time, and he was not that either.
No, far from it. I don't think that he had a home for when he was on his sojourn. I mean, he was living hand-to-mouth, and he was asking for, you know, donations, alms, whatever.
Well, I don't know about that. Let's think about that. The man was a carpenter. Have you ever done construction work, Al?
A little bit.
Could you imagine how much money you would make if you bid every job perfectly and that you never had to make a second move?
Yeah.
I mean, well, I'm sure he was quite wealthy as a construction worker, because he was probably the best there ever was and never made a mistake.
I understand he was also a boat builder, so that goes along with his construction skill, or construction worker skills, yeah, carpenter, whatever. But whether or not he was a vagabond, you know, what's more important is what Jesus came to teach us. Of course, that's been distorted and manipulated by the church and by...
That is correct, and yeah. I challenge every Protestant out there or even the Catholics for that matter, anybody claiming to be Christian, to go read the Book of Mormon, and you'll find that all these quote-unquote non-Mormon churches are actually teaching Mormonism.
Yeah. Well, I'm not going to bash any particular religion. I'm just trying to focus on what Jesus came to teach us, which is fairly simple, as I mentioned.
And what did he do? He bashed the religions of the day.
He did. He was a rebel. I don't think a lot of people
recognize that.
Yeah.
I'm going to bash all the religions I want to because the vast majority of them are money-grubbing frauds and front organizations for the mob and so forth.
Yeah, there's plenty of room for that. At the same time, on the more positive side, I think that people need a sense of what is right and wrong, you know, because there's a lot of confusion about it. Just because you're a law-abiding citizen doesn't mean that you're an upstanding, righteous person, you know, as far as morality is concerned, because the law is not necessarily based on social equality or equity or what is fair, you know, or what is just. So there are laws, perhaps, that a righteous person might even defy. One example is, did Jesus promote violence and warfare? No, not by any stretch. Jesus was a peacemaker, although he had conflict with the powers that be, you know, the Pharisees, as you say. And even the Jews in his own town, he was ostracized from them. So there was conflict there, but I don't know that he looked for it. It's just the way he was. It was generated by his demeanor and his philosophy and, you know, his statement that he was close to God, if not God himself.
Here's one common mistake that the vast majority of the religions take. They take the commandment which says, thou shalt not kill. It actually means, thou shalt do no murder. So if somebody attacks you or is in your house and trying to harm you or your family, you have every right to take him out. And that includes in wartime. If our nation is at war with a group that's trying to destroy us, like Al-Qaeda, which is a file name, actually they're Taliban people over in Afghanistan, that's not murder. That is killing in warfare. And the religions in the United States want to make us a bunch of sissies, that we won't even raise our hand if somebody attacks us, when that's not what the Bible really teaches.
There's no sin in self-defense. We all have this instinct for self-preservation. I think that's a much different than overt warfare, which is a whole Pandora's box politically, and, you know, I don't want to go there because it's just a mess. But there's no example that I know of. All the different readings that I've done from different viewpoints about Jesus, there's no statements about him engaging in warfare per se or killing anyone. He did confront people in the temple, the money changers, you know, but...
And he drove them and the animals out of the temple.
Yeah, but he didn't kill anybody.
No, he didn't kill anybody, but, you know, he didn't come to be a warrior. He's had people throughout history that were warriors, like King David and so forth, and he didn't condemn them for being a warrior.
I'm not condemning anyone. I'm just saying that what I know about Jesus' life is that he came to bring peace, love, compassion, wisdom, and spirituality to the human race, and we're still struggling with all those things. Most people are missing the mark.
Well, and they use religion as a right to go to war. Look how many wars have been fought over religion.
Right. I know.
You know? And then you got to ask yourself, gee, those guys running those religions, are they good guys or bad guys?
Well, like the Crusades, you know, millions of people perished in the name of Christianity. I don't know that Jesus would approve of that. I doubt it.
Well, I would agree.
Yeah. But Jesus probably is the quintessential spiritual leader that humanity is somewhat familiar with, you know, even though, again, there's been so many different interpretations about his life and his philosophy.
Well, I challenge anyone out there. There's a lot of, you know, a lot of these Protestant churches and whatnot said, well, there were many Jesuses. All the stories of the guy in India, Asia, and so forth. If you want to find out what those really are, go to a witchcraft store, because you can't probably get it anywhere else unless you buy it online, and get the book written by Manly P. Hall in 1900. It was his life's work. And it's called Mystic Teachings of All Time. And prior to Jesus' birth, there were five Son of the Sun gods, known as the Lamb of God, that died for the world's sins. Three were crucified on March 30th, or Easter. One was burned at the stake, and another was strangled. And those were frauds, in my opinion, to that when the real guy came along, Satan had put all these frauds out there, so everybody would say, oh, well, this, Jesus was here, there, and everywhere, and he taught this, that, and everything, when he really didn't.
Yeah, I think there have been religious leaders who have claimed to be Christ-like, professing Christian ideals, but they've actually been, you know, a wolf in sheep's clothing, doing the Satan's work. That's basically what hypocrisy is. You know, I think Satan has been very effective at pulling the wool over people's eyes, having people believe you're going down the righteous path, when in fact, you know, like you mentioned, Tibetan Buddhists, I wasn't aware of that, where you think you're doing a righteous thing, but you're winding up, cherishing,
well,
Satan.
Well, it's like a friend of mine last spring, she got an email from a friend from Deepak Chopra. I said, wait, don't tell me, and she was, I could see she was distraught. I said, wait, don't tell me what it says. Deepak Chopra is going to talk about the Bible, and then he's going to talk about Gandhi, and he's going to replace Jesus with Gandhi. Sure enough, that's what he did. He wrote this article, and he said, well, what does the Bible tell us by not telling us? And he talks about Jesus for several paragraphs, and then he starts talking about Gandhi, and his conclusion was, I don't believe that Jesus was the Christ. He was a type of Christ, and so was Gandhi. Now, I've been told by numerous contacts that Deepak Chopra is a satanic priest and was at that gross mass ceremony they did to my family. And if he wants to dispute that and say I'm wrong and everybody they told me was wrong and incorrect, welcome him on the show.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know about Deepak Chopra, but there are leaders like that, religious icons, you know, and people get sucked into following and they replace their own power with the power of these so-called gurus, you know, and I think that's a mistake. That's why I've shunned religious leaders and religions and just kind of did my own thing and did my research and formed my own conclusions.
Well, didn't Jesus say, if you really want to be follow me, give to the needy, you've given it to them, you've given it unto me?
Well, that's kind of what I've done, you know, as far as the work I've done. I've been a social worker, a counselor, a teacher. I've helped the homeless. And so I try to walk in his shoes as much as possible. And think.
You mean you've never gone and rented a stadium and charged people to come in and talk to them and let them hold their Bible and bend it and fold it like Billy Graham does and walk away saying, boy, he really did something good?
No, I don't set myself up as, a god or a mini-god like that, an icon. My spirituality is a very private thing, and I don't really talk about it too much unless someone asks. Like I say, I try to, express it in terms of my attitude towards people and the environment and my fellow creatures, and that's where I gained quite a bit from Zen Buddhism when I studied it, that there's a reverence for life as a principle that I try to live by, not just human life, but all life, whether it be animal or plant life, you know. That's one reason why I became a vegetarian. I'm not 100% vegetarian. I'm not a vegan, but...
No turkey today?
I don't know if I'm going to have turkey today. I have in the past, and, you know, if I do it once a year, I don't feel guilty about it, but I don't make it a steady habit. I don't eat meat on a regular basis. On occasion, I might. And it goes back to, well, a combination of, you know, what I believe to be healthy diet as well as my reserve.
Well, what, with what they, all the chemicals and whatnot they're doing to the beef and the pork and the poultry, I mean, just for health reasons, I could agree with many people just going vegetarian.
Yeah, I think that is the healthy choice, the most wise thing to do as far as your health is concerned. And I have excellent health. I'm 62 years old. I don't get sick. I have a lot of energy, and I don't take flu shots, so I'll probably live a long, long time unless someone tries to bump me off.
Well, maybe some of them guys have been trying to bump me off should go pay you a visit because I'm a little tired of it.
Yeah, I don't blame you. I wouldn't want to be under that kind of gun.
Oh, last time was 3 weeks ago.
Yeah, so, you know, as far as the philosophies, it's not just for me an intellectual curiosity. It's it's helped shape who I am and how I see the world and how I interact with people. And I've tried to be a compassionate person most of my life, and sometimes it's got me into trouble. And so it's not like necessarily the best option to take. That doesn't mean one should be cold, callous, and cruel. But sometimes you just have to be a little aloof from people who might take advantage of you, you know.
Yeah, I know that one all too well.
Yeah, so it's like a matter of using discernment. I recently helped the homeless, two homeless guys, and it didn't work out as far as I was concerned. You know, they took advantage of me, and I'm aware that people do that. So, like, I kind of, you know, extended myself anyway and got burned. So now I'm kind of, you know, take a step back, and I'm not quite so willing to extend myself that way. But nevertheless, I don't treat people mean or cruel, nasty, you know. And even if I disagree with somebody, sometimes I know I'm judgmental, maybe a little bit self-righteous. But it's difficult to walk that path, as Jesus said. You know, it's a lonely path, that narrow path of righteousness.
Well, and look at all these churches. You know, the way to Him is through them. They act as lawyers. Jehovah Witness, the Mormons, Worldwide Church of God, Seventh-day Adventists, and many Catholics, same way. They think that for you, they want you to believe that the path to heaven is through the minister, the priest, or whoever is leading one in the group, and it's not.
Not necessarily, no. I wouldn't, you know, give a broad brushstroke to all priests or...
I'm not talking about the people that are there trying to do the right thing. I'm talking about these money-grubbing ministers and so forth that use and abuse the people.
Well, look at all the sexual perversion going on within the Catholic Church.
And look what Pope Benedict, as soon as he came to the United States, that was the first thing he slammed down. If they can find them in the Catholic Church, see, it's not just the Catholic Church. I knew of too many cases in Worldwide Church of God and the Mormon Church where whenever that happens, they cover it up like the Catholic Church used to, but they're better at covering it up.
Yeah.
Because a lot of these ministers are devil worshipers.
Yeah.
And molesting children is part of devil worshiping religion. I know, I grew up in it.
Yeah.
Everything was done to me.
I know, that's the last place you should find something like that. I did want to make a comment about other distortions of morality that I've experienced to some extent. As I mentioned, you know, being Jewish, I went to some temple celebrations or, you know, services infrequently. One time, a friend of mine who was also Jewish said, let's go to Rosh Hashanah service. I haven't been to synagogue in ages. Come on, let's go. Okay. I was reluctant. I went, and I found the whole thing rather ludicrous. It reminded me of being a Catholic, because we read from the Torah, I think it was, the Jewish Bible sections, where you're confessing all these sins, you know, like I sin here, I sin there. Well, I didn't feel like that was true of me. I'm not particularly into sin, you know. So here I am, like, trying to go along with the crowd and reading from the Bible about all these sinful things I've done. Please forgive me, God, you know. And it didn't seem real to me. Then the other thing that I found rather disturbing was the rabbi, who was not I think he was like a Reform rabbi, was talking about Israel. And at the time, I was pretty politically savvy, you know, like my background is in sociology and psychology and political science. And so
let me add there, when I was sitting at Cult Church, Worldwide Church of God, I heard sermon after sermon, never trust a psychologist or a psychiatrist. That's because they didn't want anybody to go to them, so they'd see what they were doing with the people, in my opinion.
A good psychologist will help you become more aware and help you become self-empowered. But to finish this story, this rabbi was championing the cause of Israel. Now, at the time, I was only in my, like, maybe early 30s, so I wasn't that much aware of what was going on in Israel, you know. But I did know that there was conflict between the Palestinian people and the Israeli people. Later on, I learned more about the details because I had a friend that had Arabic ancestry. So he filled me in on the details. But even then, when I was in the synagogue and he was talking about the virtues of the Israeli people, you know, I almost turned my stomach because I know that Israel, the government of Israel, the Zionists, not necessarily all the people, the Zionists are fascists.
Well, the ones running the Israel, most of them are devil worshippers like every other country. They don't care anything about the Israeli people. It was most of the Jewish bankers put Hitler in power. They didn't care about the Jewish people.
Exactly.
You know, it was all about making money and power and control.
Right. And later I learned, and I still believe this is true, that Israeli policy towards the Palestinian people is atrocious. And
oh, it is. It absolutely is.
It's genocide. And it's you know, it really irks me to know that so many Jews support Israel without question.
Well, I think it was 5 years ago. It was either 4 or 5 years ago. And Israel knows who I am. Eugene Nicholson, Delta Force General. Eugene Nicholson, Captain Seal was my op names. And they were blowing up, you know, for decades. Every time a terrorist would go kill someone or blow something up, they'd go blow up his home. So his family would be homeless. So I emailed him. I said, you guys are doing a great job creating more terrorists. Keep blowing them homes up. 30 days later, they rescinded blowing up homes of people that attacked Israelis, blowing up the homes of their, you know, their parents, their mothers, their family, because their family didn't blow up or kill an Israeli. They did.
Right. Yeah. Well, that's a whole Pandora's box, too, you know, this political stuff that's going on between Israel and Palestine, and the roots of that goes back to, like you said, the wealthy Jewish families that really, you know, are anti-Semitic themselves, setting up a situation where, you know, it's very ironic that you have a nation, Israel, which was established when in 1947, right after the war, in the midst of a hostile Arab world. You know, what's that all about? Who did that? What was
the vast majority of the land was purchased, and when they were getting pushed out via money, the Palestinians decided it was theirs and they were going to take it back without paying for it. Now, there's a group evil. I'm not putting the Palestinians up like they're wonderful people. You know, when a bunch of angry men get together, you got a thing called group evil, and I don't care what religion they are. They'll do things they normally wouldn't do.
Yeah, well, I don't know all the details of the history of Israel and Palestine, but I know it's been a long-term conflict between the Jews and the Palestinian people. Well, I'm just pointing out kind of an irony of how Israel was established as a nation in the midst of a hostile Arab world, and, you know, there's been ongoing conflict ever since. I think that was very intentional. Whoever established it, the nation of Israel, knew exactly what they were doing to perpetuate conflict because they were in the pocket of Satan. That's what Satan's all about, deception,
well,
conflict.
That's basically all the governments.
Yeah.
With hopefully the ones leading this government, the new administration, I hope they do good for people in the United States and instead of going the opposite way like George Bush, probably the most corrupt president we've ever had.
Yeah, so, and they, you know, put on this cloak of religiosity like Bush said he's a born again Christian, and I know someone who actually, you know, buys that. That all people are hoodwinked by that kind of stuff. You know, they hear a label, born again Christian, and they think, oh,
I used to think he was until I found out he's not.
No, he's far from it.
He's very evil. The whole Iraq war was unnecessary. They captured Saddam's weapons of mass destruction before the main invasion. I mean, and he knew that. There was a Suppo-led team that was going to go kidnap Saddam, Uday, and Hussein right before the invasion, and Bush turned the plans over to Saddam Hussein, so they were ambushed. You know, that's Christian.
No, it's backstabbing politics as usual. That's what it is. Yes.
It's called getting billions in kickbacks from the contractors they're wasting money over there on.
Yeah, that's a whole ball of wax there that, you know, it's very confusing, and it's intentionally created that way, you know, to make sure people don't know the truth. So people should just not buy what they hear on TV or they read in the media about, you know, the politicians. I've done a lot of research. That's my background, you know, as a teacher, a college teacher. That's what they're supposed to do. You're supposed to research a topic, and you learn the scientific method, which I think is a good way to think, because you consider as much information as possible, even if it's, you know, from different camps, and then you form your own conclusion, whereas people will just turn on the TV and someone will say something, you know, position of authority, oh, that must be the gospel. That's not the way it is.
Well, I would encourage everyone out there who believes that they're, you know, trying to follow God to get this book called New Age Versions of the Bible. And he lays them verse by verse, side by side, from the King James to the NIV. And it shows where they're sometimes subtly, sometimes not so subtly, replacing Lucifer with Jesus. And they've bastardized the Bible. The concordance for an NIV doesn't even tell you what the words mean in Greek or Hebrew, the original languages. And it's got like 80, 90,000 less words in it than the King James.
The Bible is one source of inspiration and spirituality, morality. I recommend that people explore various religious ideologies and practices, and then decide, you know, pick the best from each. And because religion is a source of great conflict, it's not something that brings people together unless you're part of a religious group. You know, then you have this in-group feeling. Everybody believes the same or thinks the same, acts the same.
You have forms of Hinduism which are very similar to Buddhism. And look at the peace they're reaping over in India right now. They're blowing the hell out of the place.
Again, religion is used to distort and manipulate people, you know, for devious ends. So don't get all wrapped up in that. It's my advice. If you're going to want to be a spiritual person, you're going to have to stand on your own 2 feet and just not go along with the crowd. There's nothing wrong with ritual and tradition and custom, but if it creates religious hatred or animosity, then I think you're going down the wrong path.
Well, that's pretty much what all of them do on television. I've been told that they're all frauds. They're all front organizations. And either they're devil worshippers or they go to the devil worshipping ceremonies to go along with it so they get the perks, the kickbacks. The criminal activity going around the United States that they front.
The most effective thing that Satan does is to create the belief that he does not exist.
Yeah, there's a lot of people that believe that. I've seen some evidence. If he don't, at least his demons exist.
Well, there's no doubt in my mind that Satan exists as a separate, real entity power. You know, I mean, I can't prove it. I'm not out to prove it to anybody, but I'm convinced of it personally. And I see his power manifested in so many areas of life. I think Satan has been the dominant influence in the world since mankind has been on the earth.
Yeah, we've chosen to go his way. If he can't get you to choose to follow him directly, he wants you to miss the mark if you're trying to follow God, Jesus, the higher power. That's the way it works.
Yeah, you know, and it works in sometimes very overt ways and sometimes very subtle ways as far as Satan's power and influence.
Most of it's subtle.
Most of it is subtle. You can, I look at it in terms of your everyday choices, and, you know, like sometimes we have conflicting thoughts and impulses. Sometimes they are for the good and for yourself and for others, but and sometimes it's, it works in the opposite direction. And I think that's the influence of both Satan and God. I think we have those two powers or forces at our disposal, so to speak, or influencing us in every decision that we make. And so if we become aware of that influence or that impulse of that dichotomy, we can make better choices. But if we negate it, oh, no, you know, Satan doesn't exist. That's just fabrication or fantasy. It's a matter of people.
Well, this is what I learned because I'm a mind control victim, and they've taught me all kinds of things. The way they work, let's say they're whether it be one of those child molesting Catholic priests that's a devil worshiper to the Mormons who, and the Masons who believe that Lucifer was Jesus' brother and he's really not that bad a guy. They want to teach you so you miss the mark. So let's say there's some kind of earthquake or hurricane or some disaster that God will actually cause. While everybody else is in shock, these guys are running around, they're trained operatives, buying up the businesses and properties at bargain basement prices. And this is what they're trained to do, and they're trying to get us to miss the mark so that when a disaster does come, they can end up with a bigger piece of the pie every time.
So the righteous thing to do, if you're in the middle of a disaster, of course, first take care of yourself, and then if people need help, be the good Samaritan, you know. And
well, there was a book written in France in 1840. I got a copy of it in English called False Philanthropy. And the way these people, a lot of them do it, is they rape, pillage, and burn all their lives, and then they set up these foundations that are supposed to be doing good, when in fact the vast majority of them are just fronts for managing money. They have these billions of dollars in there, and 5% or 2 to 5% will be used for actually helping somebody. But the rest is to make more money with.
Yeah, like the Rockefeller Foundation, for example, fits that bill right there. Uh-huh.
Although, you know, I don't care for the Masons, but I do know the Shriners, which, you know, they believe that Jesus and Lucifer was brothers, and he was the secret guy and all that. And they're... customs are basically devil worship. They have, you know, they do good. They do good for burn victims.
Yeah, I've read that they do good for burn victims. Then they use that as a ruse, like you're saying, you know, to
offset their evil they do over here with their good they're doing over there.
Yeah, so they, you know, appeal to people's generosity and caring for young people victimized by, you know, burns. By paying for, you know, their surgery or whatever in burn hospitals. But I understand that that's a very small amount of money that goes towards that. They raise a great deal of money for that, just like Cancer Society, you know.
Well, that you might, you know, I'm not aware of the money trail. It might be another one of those foundations where that's just where they launder their money. But I know many of these devil worshiping ministers and whatnot and followers think they can play both sides by doing good over here while they're doing evil over there. And they may even do quite a bit more good than they do evil, but it doesn't work that way. You can't offset being overtly evil by being good somewhere else.
Yeah, well, if you take a look at Clinton, Bill Clinton, for example, you know, and after his presidency, he travels around the world and went to China and you know, tending to HIV over there in China, and it looks like he's doing a lot of good. That he's a philanthropist, but if you delve into his political machinations, you realize that he's far from it. You know, that guy is very corrupt through and through.
Well, it's like I said earlier, I've been told that a number of these people are repenting. And I think the key issue will be, like the Clintons, okay, are they going to go back and start helping people that they've screwed over, ruined their lives, or whatever? I want to see if that's going to happen.
I doubt it.
We'll see.
Yeah. I always like to keep the door open for people to repent. But I'm a skeptic, almost a cynic as far as that goes. And again, I've had some personal experience with trying to help people who obviously need help because they have self-destructive patterns or addictions or whatever, you know. And I go back to this homeless guy that I allowed to stay with me rent-free for 8 months because he was having a hard time being homeless and he had physical problems and addiction problems. I thought, okay, well, you know, I'll do what I can to help him out. Well, I got screwed over. I don't want to go into detail, but you know, the guy, he didn't want to repent, and he was given a lot of opportunity to do so here, you know, through my generosity. And, like, I haven't had any family members treat me the way I treated them. So, you know, you can get burned by people who are just in the grasp of evil. They just can't seem to work their way out of it.
Well, it's like the World Bank and the Federal Reserve with me. I've got somebody, Warren, that's a very good man in the world, and his life was saved. He's very powerful. And that was last October, and since then I've had to fight 16 underground death matches to the World Bank, the Jesuit, the Illuminati's champions, and I'm still here.
Uh-huh.
And I shouldn't be. And they don't want to give up. Even if they were to see miracles in their presence, they still don't want to repent.
That's right. That's what I'm saying, that people are intransigent when it comes to their evil ways, their sinful ways. You get into the grasp or clutches of Satan, it's difficult to get out, even if, you know, you have help and people encouraging
you. Well, all these, I've been praying since 2000, and all these people use my ex-wife, children, myself as mind-controlled sex slaves and whatnot. God causes them to have pancreatic cancer, and man, they are. And many of the heads of the Federal Reserve and the World Bank are dying of pancreatic cancer, and they still don't want to repent.
Well, people are habituated in terms of how they think, their values. They tend to gather around others who think the way they do and act the way they do, you know, to reinforce whatever patterns they have. Habituation is difficult to break.
Well, let's take the day like Thanksgiving Day. You know, people think, well, we're giving thanks to God, blah, blah, blah. But look what all the big guys did to the American Indians.
Oh, I know. It's atrocious.
It's the big boys always. You know, the Hudson Bay Company. That was designed so they caused wars and conflicts so that they can seize more property.
Yeah, I was telling a friend of mine yesterday, we were talking about the educational system, and my opinion of it is not that high. being an educator myself and, you know, recalling how I was educated as a child, I recall when I was a stepfather to my stepdaughter, how she came home one day, it was Columbus Day, and how the teacher was extolling the virtues of Columbus, and I couldn't help myself but tell her some of the real facts about Columbus and how he treated the Indians and how he spread smallpox by giving them blankets that were infected with smallpox.
And the conquistadors, they present them as just these wonderful adventurers on a long hike. Man, they were raping, pillaging, and burning and stealing everything they could.
Yeah, so, you know, she broke down and started crying. Oh, no, that's not the way it is. And so it's sad that our educational system reinforces myths and disinformation as fact and true, you know, to perpetuate certain, you know, icons and that kind of thing.
Yeah, like, you know, the winners usually write the history books. Like, they rewrote why the Civil War was fought. You know, the winners, so they could justify going down to the South and stealing all the land. I'm not justifying slavery in any way, but that's what it was all about. It was the North was going to do a corporate takeover of the South, and that's what they did.
You know, I never read anything or heard anything negative about Lincoln. He's supposedly one of the best presidents we had, but...
Well, there's a lot of stuff that him and his wife were into witchcraft.
Well, I was going to say that I know that he was responsible for determining the execution of Indian chiefs, you know, during the wars to conquer their land. So he's not free of blame as far as, you know, how he treated people. Although he helped, you know, he helped the black people become not enslaved. But there's, I don't think there's been any president that's got a, you know, 100%
The blacks were going to be freed anyway. The South had agreed, from what I had read, that they were going to end slavery by 1866. And, you know, so the war was not about slavery. It was over taxes, Washington takeover, and the corporate guys running everything. That's what it was really about.
Things haven't changed in that regard.
Yeah, now we're all their slaves.
Yeah.
Serfs in England gave one-third of everything they had to the lords and ladies and whatnot, and over here they take more than half what we earn and use it in their corrupt ways.
Yeah, good old tax system.
Yeah.
Income tax is illegal, but as you said, they'll come after you if you try to defy them. So we're all economic slaves, and it's curious how we perceive work. Most of us extol the virtue of work, the Protestant work ethic, and I don't think there's anything wrong with working, but the fact of the matter is we have to work. You cannot survive unless you want to be a pauper and want to be on welfare.
Well, there's a lot of us that aren't working right now. There's no work in my area, period.
I know.
Not even any temporary work for stores at Christmas time. Well, we got just a few seconds left. Al, if anyone wishes to contact me, you may email me at eugenebcolson@yahoo.com. It's eugenebcolson @yahoo.com. You want to give out your email address if anyone wants to contact you, Al?
Yeah, that'd be Operation Voodoo, VOODOO, @yahoo.com.
Oh, Operation Voodoo. Well, it was. Thank you for being my guest, Al, and I want to thank Donald Newsom of PBS Internet Radio for sponsoring this show. And we'll talk again, Al. You have a happy Thanksgiving.
Same to you.
And this is Eugene B. Colson of Mind Controlled America, signing off.